Our guest is Ted Schmidt. Looking at the name, I can't read it. Ted Schmidt. And the book is Never Neutral. And I want to say this about the author. In a lifetime of teaching, Ted Schmidt was honored by teachers and colleagues at large. In 1991, he received the Ontario English Teachers Award of Merit, the highest distinction the association grants. In 1988, he received the Gloria Nan Award for his writing on Catholic education. In 2002, he received a Social Justice Award from the Toronto Secondary Catholic Teachers Association. In 2006, the Ontario Teachers Federation honored him with the Greer Memorial Award for outstanding commitment to publicly funded education. A lifelong Torontonian, Ted Schmidt was the first teacher in Canada to teach the Holocaust systematically, beginning in 1968. His formative years lived in the midst of Toronto's Jewish community resulted in his first book, Shabbos Goy, A Catholic Boyhood, 2001. He is also the author of Journeys to the Heart of Catholicism, Seraphim Publishers, 2007. Described by students as inspiring, a rebel, outrageous, a thorn in the side of the hierarchy, the award-winning teacher refuses to use the word career when describing his time in teaching. I had no career. I had a life in teaching with but one desire, a deeper immersion in the sacred soil of my students. In this sense, I was downwardly mobile, he muses. Inspirations in his life in teaching include Rabbi Abraham Heschel and Rabbi Jesus. Ted Schmidt is married to Joan, is wife of 42 years. He has 3 grown children and 5 grandchildren, and a wonderful quote that says, teaching, we learn, and of course, Ted Schmidt's with us. Ted, thanks for coming.
Great to be here, Phil.
I'm going to tell you about it. This is a great book. It is full of good Canadian history, Toronto and Ontario, and, of course, the history of the really the most important struggles for justice throughout your lifetime and mine. And I hope people get it. Again, the title is Never Neutral, A Teaching Life. I want to say, you know, talking about what we can learn about our own history, your mother's story helps us understand something. She, like a lot of Catholics, has a kind of a special problem that she faced. It was called Orange Ontario at one time. I guess I got that right. The Orange Order, when she was a young woman. And she was the record, a great student. But her prospects were a little limited. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, she was a depression person. She graduated from the Faculty of Ed in 1933, and a very humble woman. But she told us that the dean called her in and said, Miss Harrison, you're one of the best students we have. And there were only 5 jobs in the in the city in those times. And he said, you know the reason we can't hire you. And she said, well, she just accepted it, not because she was a woman, but because she was a Catholic. And she didn't have much rancor, but she just said, well, that's the way it was in those days.
She just that's something, by the way, kind of a theme in your book.
Yeah.
People felt they just had to take the blow, right? I mean, they were not in a position. So what was she going to do? Was the church going to run to her defense and say, we're going to picket you? No, that wasn't going to happen.
No, and I think that was the status of Catholics in those days. It was largely a Protestant country, or a Protestant educational system, and Catholics had to keep your head, like Jews, below the firing line.
Yeah,
and I was really graced to grow up in the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. And so I picked up from my mother a lot of this, what happens to minorities. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it in my first book, being targeted as a Jew because I played baseball for Harvard Collegiate in the summer times. And, we had the Star of David on us as we went around playing in different playgrounds. And the ugly ethnic curses, I couldn't put it together. I was the only Christian on the team. And I was just astonished by this. But when you're 11, 12, uh-huh. you can't unpack it.
No.
But since all of my friends were Jews, I mean, I didn't see them as Jews. Yeah. They were just my buddies.
Well, that's Harbor Collegiate, right?
Yeah, yeah. By the way,
graduated many outstanding.
Absolutely.
The gentleman from 60 Minutes, I forget, Morley Schaefer.
I think
it was Harbor, wasn't he?
Well, he was Bloor, but, you know, that was the area. I mean, we had Supreme Court justices and Stephen Lewis and Bora Laskin, and so many, Wayne Schuster, so many great people. Yeah. But I was lucky to be planted there, and I was just a kid. And so by the time I got to university, 8 years later, I began to really study this seriously. Mm-hmm. And vowed if I ever got into teaching that I would really take it on, the Holocaust, and I did.
I guess, by the way, is there a question here? You didn't go to a Catholic school?
I went to a Catholic school, St. Peter's. It was at Bathurst and Bloor. All my friends, of course, were at Palmerston Public or King Edward, and then they went on to Central Tech or Harvard, and I just took the Bathurst car. But it was such a neighborhood.
Now you're ringing bells for me. I realize that I started to know Catholic kids when I got in high school.
Yeah.
And you know something? I come from a town of maybe 3,000, one of my little towns, and I couldn't tell you where the Catholic school was.
Yeah. Well, there may not have been one.
No, there was one. But, I mean, at a high school level, it's where I got to know them.
Yeah. We came together around the Kiwanis Club. That opened its doors for the outrageous price of 25 cents. And for, you know, big families like ours and parents who came through the Depression, that was a godsend. And that's where you learn to mix with everybody. And and my best friends were Black, Japanese, and Jewish. And so, I mean, this was just a luck being thrown into this stew. So it made me, all through my life, a rabid anti-racist of any kind. And so when I got into the Catholic system, I began to teach very seriously the Holocaust. And many students over the years have told me that's the greatest stuff that they loved about my teaching.
Yeah. Well, and to date that question, so that's 1968. This is
– Yeah.
Did you begin – what role did the big moment for the Catholic community, and I know even for the rest of us, with John 23rd – and the Vatican II.
Yeah.
What role did that moment have in your teaching the Shoah?
Well, John 23rd, who opened the doors of the Catholic Church, 1962 with the Vatican Council, he had saved Jews in Bulgaria. And in 1964, the church just said, we had to get rid of this awful language about the perfidious Jews.
Yeah.
And that was a real breakthrough because, you know, I grew up in an anti-Semitic culture.
Yeah.
And the church was rife with it. And a lot of the kids I'd gone to school with, they threw this language around. And it had to die a death. And so the council was an extraordinary moment for me as a Catholic. I lived in a Catholic ghetto. This opened all sorts of intellectual doors and said...
when you say ghetto, what neighborhood are you in?
Well, you know, I think the whole church was ghettoized because it was a fairly Protestant country. As I said in my book, my parents didn't have one theology book in their house. And you couldn't study theology unless you had a priest's permission before 1960. So we had lots of priests in the house, but and I go on to say that the big change in the church today is that I have four brothers. Three of them have theological libraries better than the parish priest. But that's, you know, that's what Vatican II did. It excited us about being engaged in the world and not living inside a Catholic ghetto that we did intellectually, I'm saying. You know, so... when I hit university, the 60s were happening, and that was extraordinary.
Well, it gave you, didn't it, the special momentum. I can recall a professor who was going around, and he was just absolutely ecstatic. He's a brilliant guy. No one knew he was a Catholic, actually.
Yeah.
But we started to know because he said, read this, and he had some kind of statement, something from John the 23rd.
Yeah.
And we were all prepared not to like it and worked very hard not to like it, but failed. We all said, all right, all right, he's onto something.
Yeah, yeah.
And that meant to us that all suddenly there was these people who were there because they followed the Gospels.
That's right, and that transformed my own teaching. I taught in the public system for 5 years. It was a great working-class community in Mimico. I loved it. But I really felt called that I had to get into the Catholic system to raise these issues in a deeper way, the moral and ethical issues that were confronting the world at the time, you know, mm-hmm. Vietnam. And I tell the story, Phil, in the book about being outraged at what was going on in Vietnam, and yet there were no Catholic models for me. None of the priests were speaking about. When I marched up Yonge Street in 67, there was no Catholics that I knew of, no clergy, and there was Rabbi Feinberg and some United Church. And so I really had to find a way, you know, where were the mentors for me? I mean, I knew this was so evil. And I tell the story in the book about being called on the carpet by a priest who was the dean of priests in Scarborough, and he had a dossier on me. And did you write this defending Martin Luther King?
Yeah, your press statement.
Yeah. Well, I would write the
clippings and the quotes.
Absolutely. And I felt I was in the church of Joe McCarthy.
I think you might have been, actually.
Yeah, I was. And not the Church of Jesus Christ, who died for a new world, world being born, a world of solidarity and compassion.
Yeah. Let me just remind everybody, we're talking to Ted Schmidt, whose name is, I guess, Theodore, right?
Frederick, actually.
Really? Oh, now we're getting separate. Now, Ted? Frederick?
Well, my dad was called that.
I wanted to say, well, Theodore means gift of God.
It does. You're up on your Greek.
Not at all. I was looking up Fyodor Dostoevsky and found that was Theodore. So I thought, oh, now I've got something for Ted Schmidt. Oh, the title is never neutral, by the way, before we go further.
Yeah.
Never neutral. It's a brand new book, A Teaching Life, by the way, full of great photographs. And
Book City. That's where you can get it.
That's a great name for a bookstore anyway, mm-hmm. Book City.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never neutral. Ted Schmidt. Make sure I'm going to call in and remind me to mention the title of this book. And we're talking to Ted Schmidt. So you had a leader, all right, and I remember not liking him, a guy named Cardinal Spellman.
Well, Spellman was the famous bishop of New York City. And, of course, that pulpit was the most powerful Catholic pulpit. He was kind of a reactionary. His his famous line, "My country, right or wrong," about Vietnam.
You think wouldn't the other cardinals or bishops say to him, "Who do you think you are?"
Well, you know, Catholics, Phil, had to line up with the prevailing powers. They didn't want to be seen as contrarians, even though Jesus was a contrarian and paid for it with his life. So here's Spellman proving that he's more American than Americans.
Yeah, and by the way, you explained that very well. As well, that's another segue we probably ought to take advantage of. That is that Catholics felt they had to be more American than the other Americans.
Yeah, that's right. And
is that still true, by the way?
No, I mean, I think with the mass improvement in Catholic theological education, we've moved light years. And that's why it's such a threat to the hierarchy, because no longer Catholic lay people are children. You know, they've got up off the ground, they're adult, and they're speaking back. And
Well, the church also has a great message.
Oh.
You do describe a time when it's sort of closed-mouthed and rather scary.
Yes.
But I was thinking, you know, half the time I feel like being critical, but the other time I have to notice that America, on May 1st, 2006, had the first May Day experience where the whole country was shut down largely by Mexican-Americans over the issue of treatment of immigrants, and particularly just plain working people who happen to be Latino, but also Catholic.
Yes.
My memory is the Catholic Church was rather supportive of that.
Oh, very much
and
so.
And look how they're making a new country with that idea.
Yeah, and for me, it was the shock of seeing the two Berrigan brothers resist the war. And I said, well, there are models of resistance. And in May of 68, they burned the draft guard records. They were the first priests indicted. And I found my models. I said, these people are proclaiming the real gospel of Jesus Christ, of being peacemakers. anti-war. I mean, that seemed natural to me. Well, I found out it wasn't too natural when I started teaching, you know, and I invited my students out to say no to war and onto the street, and I took them out of the classroom and invited them to become witnesses. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, these kids were 17, 18. I was teaching later high school years, and I had kids in my class that were in the Salvadoran Army when they were 14. Yeah. So at 18, you can vote. Okay, so let's get out and witness to that we're peacemakers. So, for instance, in 1980, Reagan became president, and I knew this was totally bad news for the world and mm-hmm. bad news for poor people. Mm-hmm. And I was right. But I mm-hmm. read history, and we started a vigil for 5 years every Friday. And people didn't know how to take it. Like, here is a teacher out on the street before class with huge signs saying no. People still remind me about that, but I didn't think it was too different. I just said, this is a chance for teachers and students together. Mm-hmm. You know, so later in 1990, when the Iraq War began, I'm at another school, and I said, well, my God, the bombs are dropping on these poor people in Iraq. I got to do this again. And we were out there one day, and a limo pulled right up. A guy jumped out of the car. We had the signs up, resisting war, and it was the premier of the province, Bob Rae. Uh-huh. And he looked at us, and he said, what's going on here? I said, it's a vigil. What's a vigil? I says, a vigil's a way of saying no to the war. I said, this is a Catholic school. We're supposed to be peacemakers, mm-hmm. and this is what we're doing. Well, the students couldn't believe it. I knew that Rae only lived a few blocks away in the West End there. So I wasn't shocked. I knew who he was. And the kids just thought this.
Besides, you're an honest man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then we were on the radio for, I was on the radio for 3 straight days on CBC Morning.
Because of that?
Because of that. People found out about it. And they had a wonderful reporter, Satinder Bindra, who later went on to CNN, and he knew my work at Neil McNeil. Mm-hmm. And so he came out, and he did 3 days. They got the most calls they ever got on the CBC. And half of them wanted me fired, and half said, well, this is the greatest teaching we've seen. I didn't take it seriously. You know, I felt I was being paid to try to model what a gospel person would be, and that's anti-war.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's no two sides to that. So, you know, they weren't doing it at Runnymede or Humberside.
Whether you took it seriously, at least they did. And look at all the people became animated.
Yeah, and the phone calls were ringing, and I got, you know, my own school board that really didn't have a lot of time for me.
I noticed, by the way, you're a ready polemicist. You are set. When anything happens, you write quickly and
well, I think you have to speak. We're
stay in the mix. I mean,
yeah, you got to be in the mix. That's what the church said with the Vatican Council. You're there to serve the world. Get in there and add your voice. Mm-hmm. You know, and the problem with my own church is that if they're not leading the parade, they're not in it. You know, we have to be
a lot
the
of that in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, yeah. I mean, we've marched with all kinds of people. You know, and as Jim Endicott used to say. Well, just because I say Stalin says 2 and 2 are 4, and I agree with him, that doesn't make me a communist.
Yes,
you know that's the issue. War is evil.
Yeah. By the way, I'm really glad you dropped in the name Jim Endicott. I had his son on a long time ago, but there was another great fighter for peace.
Oh yeah.
And boy, what an articulate, brilliant guy.
And I knew Jim.
Long history.
You know, I met people. This is a city where there are people
like that. Tremendous people.
And I'd phone them up. To me, they were elders. And I learned from them. I think some of the greatest people I learned from were non-Christians, were atheists, but who were committed to the social struggle.
I think you praise Chris Hedges, for example, who, boy, he is.
Oh, incredible.
He's got his dukes up everywhere I see him. He comes out of some sort of Christian.
His father was a
minister, right?
That's right.
This is Ted Schmidt, and by the way, Ted's a good talker, so I'm afraid to interrupt him because but I want to tell everybody he's got a great book, Never Neutral: A Teaching Life by Ted Schmidt. And you know something, we're not mentioning you were a great coach, and you have a lot to say about sports.
Yeah.
But on this matter of taking your students and doing something, you said that you had an outstanding basketball team, I think it was, and you said someone had died of note, and you decided to take Well, no, it might have been Cesar Chavez.
It was Chavez.
Around the grape strike. I don't know. But you took your basketball team or the athletic squad.
Yeah.
And you went to City Hall.
Yeah, that's where I met Dan Heap. And I said, no practice today, boys. We got bigger fish to fry. There's serious issues in society. I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. And don't call me coach. Uh-huh. I always said, don't call me coach. I'm a teacher. And I want to model, you know, walking for justice. And I went down because there was a vigil, and Dan Heap was there, and defending Cesar Chavez. And that wasn't unusual for me.
That actually would be a good way in that period to say, well, where will I meet you? Just say, I'll meet you at Dan Heap. You know, there's got to be something on the great boycott. Where will I meet you? Well, I'll be with at Dan Heap. But on that point, isn't it true? My impression is that had you been in the other system, they might – you might have been gone quicker for that.
Well, that
or
may have been true.
You might have been gone quick. Put it that way.
I don't know.
I've never seen a teacher do that
I didn't think twice about it. I just felt by virtue of my baptism.
But that is some credit to the Catholic
system. Yes, it is.
They couldn't tell you, no, that's wrong.
No, and I vowed that I'd be the best read person in the scriptures, and that they, if they went after me, I had to know the story that I was part of. And so, I was in trouble, but it didn't really bother me that much. You know, I knew I could defend myself, and people were always worried about me. But I said, I'm not worried. I mean, and I found great people within the system. Ed Nelligan, who was the director, would come across the floor. There was a Father Milady. I wanted to get out of the system after 2 years because they kept saying how great they were. And I kept saying, where's the beef? And this priest got me a sabbatical to go study scripture in England. And I couldn't believe that he got me this. And that was a real wonderful thing
to
do.
And you met some outstanding people there.
I met great scripture scholar, my hero, Hubert Richards. And so I came back really fully engaged and knowledgeable about the story I was part of. And so I didn't worry about.
And a generation prior, that would have been completely forbidden.
Well, I guess in retrospect, there weren't people like that before. Because Catholics had not yet achieved a confidence. You know, your role is to be quiet and teach in the classroom. Well, that wasn't enough for me. Yeah. And I always quoted a Catholic worker named Charlie King who said, our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. Mm-hmm. You know, is that my life wasn't over at 4 o'clock. As you know, I had a family and a wife, but also I had also skills in that I could get engaged in historical issues.
And by the way, it is a family tradition, as Hank Williams said. All of you are involved. I mean, you seem to be blessed.
We are blessed.
Your brothers and your mother your wife, and I assume some or all your children.
Yeah, I just think
one of you is going to get in serious trouble here.
It goes. Yeah, we've all been in trouble. We've all, as I say.
Do you envy the Berrigans being on the top 10 wanted list?
Well, they were gentle people. I've known them well.
They were 10 most wanted, right?
Well, they were. And
oh,
you know, when you come from a family like ours with great support and confidence, and we didn't worry too much about it. I mean, people would be critical, but you know, you could stay at home and never get out of bed if you worried about people criticizing you. So I didn't take it too personally, and yet a lot of people didn't like what I was doing. But it never really bothered me.
I noticed, it seemed to me, reading the book, and it's Ted Schmidt, Never Neutral, Teaching Life, and it can be, you can get it at Book City.
Right.
And it's a brand new book, and it's, if you live in Toronto or, well, actually, you live in the world, you're going to see something in this book, but there's a lot of great stories about this city, East End, West End, Catholics, Jews, teaching the Holocaust. I can't resist telling you a joke or making a joke. If you went to the grape strike thing, I don't see how they could criticize you because you're praising God and Caesar, right?
Well,
Cesar Chavez?
That is a good joke. And I remember meeting Caesar at in the East End at Victoria Park. Remember, we used to picket the Dominion stores. And so I had some of my basketball players. And And that's why I became, and I write a lot about sports.
Now, those guys
sport.
Appreciated that, right? They didn't say, oh, golly, Professor Schmidt's getting us in trouble.
Oh, no, no, no.
They didn't call you coach. What did they call you?
Well, Mr. Schmidt, I said, you know, boys, we're going up to support this. There's a lot of injustice going on. These people mm-hmm. are looking for our support. And Chavez was a saint. And as you know, there, he has his birthday. And there's a state holiday in California for the work that this great man did. So I was lucky. By getting engaged, I met unbelievable people.
Yes.
You know, that expanded my horizons. And they were outside. And then I met brothers and sisters in the public system. You know, you always find it wasn't just a Catholic thing.
You formed Teachers for Social Justice.
Yeah.
You were one of the folks who formed
Teachers for Social Justice. It seemed ironic that, you know, you had to have an organization for social justice, it seemed to me, to come with your baptism, that you should be a teacher for social justice.
Yes.
So I was very engaged in sports. You're absolutely right. But I wasn't engaged in sports world because I had come through with classmates like Dave Keon and Frank Mahovlich.
Yeah, by the way, you were a personal friend of Carl Brewer.
Yes, Carl and I were very close friends.
You went
friends.
To school together? Or you were
no, we met in city final baseball.
Your teammates?
I didn't like the guy at all. he was too good an athlete, but a friend brought us together, and I began to understand what a beautiful human being he was.
He was a thinker, that guy.
He was a very, very good thinker. But he would say to me, like when he quit the Leafs in 66, I got a letter from him when I was in Europe, and he said, I really envy you. You're doing something so beautiful, teaching. And he said, what am I doing? Chasing a rubber disc around a rink. That was Carl. Yeah. So, you know.
Doing it very well, by the way.
He was so good. But the sports world thing, I was always a critic of people getting obsessed with sports. Mm-hmm. I met too many goofs, you know, that if they weren't on the right side of the scoreboard, it was a lost season rather than the engagement on a day-to-day basis with young people. Mm-hmm. That was the excitement for me and the great fun. And, you know,
What is that line? Pascal, is it? The twin myths of shadows of the false something, winning and losing.
Yeah, he called them the twin imposters.
The twin imposters.
Winning and losing, you know. Yeah. And people would say to me, what kind of a season did you have? And I said, well, it was great. Well, you know, I only missed the playoffs once. But, you know, to me, it was the human relationships. Mm-hmm. And those relationships still continue. Of those kids I coach, they're now 50, you know.
Yeah, some of them went to the NHL and whatnot. But I hope they took your values with them, values that the two of you
many were great young people that I coached, and I learned from them. You know, as I say in my book, Discimus Docendo, we learn by teaching. Mm-hmm. And you don't have all the answers. And mm-hmm. young people with their enthusiasm, there was a lot there. So let's not be too obsessed about winning. Well,
and on that, and again, this is never neutral, a teaching life. Ted Schmidt, Book City, brand new book. Make sure you get that. Well, you were also, you had a winning team and you had a winning strategy. Not that you cared that much, but you taught your seven-man team to use the full court press for the whole game. Now, that would drive me crazy.
Well,
if I was the end of the team.
Yeah,
I
was teaching.
There used to be that little grace period. You toss the ball in and think about it while you're moving it down.
Well, if you're going
to
coach,
you don't like to be bothered by a guy trying to take the ball from you.
I know. And we were a very small school at Mimico, and we had seven players. And they were the most extraordinary in-shape kids because the coach, you know, we were the best team in Canada. Wherever we went, people wanted to knock us off. But the next year was just as much fun, you know. Yeah. All those players had graduated. I just enjoyed it. But it was just a great, great experience to do that. And then I had great, you know, provincial championship baseball teams. So, yeah, I could coach. But as I said, you know, I used Thoreau's line, who will teach the young the art of living? I could teach you how to pivot on a double play, mm-hmm. but I want to teach you bigger issues, you know, about engagement in the world. Mm-hmm. And don't be so obsessed about it. Most of you aren't going to be professional athletes, mm-hmm. but you want to take some of these values about commitment and solidarity and concern and give yourself up for the other guy, you know, that type of thing.
By the way, there is always around sport that sense, and many people who consider themselves sports fanatics are actually have a, some sort of ethical system when they're watching, and they do like a team player. They like a guy who,
oh yeah,
who sacrifices, lays down a bunt when he's a home run guy, but it does what he will can to help the team. There's a real strong moral thing underneath going on when people watch sports.
That's why I watch Pavel Datsyuk, the greatest hockey player in the NHL, because I just love exactly what you're saying, Phil. People who give themselves up, you know, who play both ends of the court. And, you know, if you take a baseball team, you know, I was lucky. I played ball for the greatest coach, the first guy inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Played for him?
Carmen Bush. He was unbelievable. Hmm. He taught me so much. I felt that there was a mentor, you know. He was an amazing man who put the kid first. Mm-hmm. And he never made more than $10,000 a year. He was out of grade 13 at 16 years of age, but illiterate parents, Italian immigrant.
But I bet he was a happy guy. Now,
he was an extraordinary man.
You got a great quote here, and I want people to hear it from the – it was a some evangelical preacher talked about if you are standing with the principles of Jesus, certain things are going to – three things are going to happen to you.
Oh, yeah.
What is that going to happen if you, live by the doctrine of Jesus?
It is. It's in the first part of my book. He talks about three things are going to happen to you, you know, if you're serious about this. And those three things are, let's see, where is it here in the book? Jesus promised his disciples three things, that they would be entirely fearless, absurdly happy, and they'd be constantly in trouble. And that pretty well summed up my teaching life. Yeah. You know, I was always in trouble, but they were for good things, I thought.
But you understood. I mean, by the way, that must be part of the joy. I mean, obviously, if you're going to raise a question in a meeting or ask people to demonstrate, you understand a little pain involved because people have to risk something a little bit. Maybe they're going to cause anxiety.
Yeah. And so there'd be phone calls.
Yeah. Trouble has to go with advancement, doesn't it? I mean, that's pain.
Well, nope. I mean, what's the central symbol?
No pain, no gain, I think.
That's right. What's the central symbol of Christianity? It's the cross. There's going to be a struggle. And that's okay. You know, and there's going to be no resurrection unless there's a cross. Mm-hmm. The two always go together. And so don't worry about the criticism. And the irony was the criticism I most got was from my own Catholic community. Yeah. But it was fairly middle
afraid,
class.
Right? It's fear.
Well, they didn't, you know, they'd get a few phone calls. And mm-hmm. I'd say, well, what are you worrying about a phone call? I said to one principal, take a look behind you, the guy in the cross. Do you think he got a few calls? He got more than a few calls. You know, so if you're going to be engaged in this, you're going to run into some negativity. But the people are good. They may not understand what you're trying to do, but do it anyway.
Yeah. No, you join quite a gathering of we have a number of Catholic activists or just the sort of conscience, which are more and more people thinking about them more and more. One, of course, is Martin Sheen.
Oh, yeah.
Who's a great figure. I got to ask you, did you see the film called The Catholics, where it's about the young priest bringing John the 23rd information to a group of very calcified old priests? You're not too happy to hear it.
Well, I met those calcified priests, you know, after the 60s. And guys like Sheen, you know, who came alive as a Catholic because he met Dan Berrigan when they did that movie, The Mission, and got in touch with the real Catholicism that I got in touch with, the holiness of the earth, the importance of justice, you know, the dignity of the human person.
And he does it the right way. He shows up.
He
shows
up.
In other words, it's a cold day. There's a small demonstration, and look who's here.
He's amazing. He's an amazing, humble man. You know, so those people are out there. And, you know, I say in the book, people ask me why I'm a Catholic. I said, well, it's not because of the pointy heads and, you know, the bishops. Yeah. It's the extraordinary people that I've met, guys like Sheen and the Berrigans and my mother and father, and incredible people, you know, that really took it seriously.
Yeah. We're talking with Ted Schmidt, a teaching life, never neutral. And it's at Book City, so make sure you get a copy. By the way, it is chock full of great pictures. And one of the things I like is photographs of posters and things which give you a sense of the time, place, and the language at that moment. By the way, you revive, of course, a lot of very important terms and whatnot that were it sort of lost track of really great language from the 60s.
Yeah.
Of course, you've carried it over. A question about the church. I want to ask you again about teaching the Holocaust, but yeah. Again on this issue of some credit to the church. We have an issue right now of the U.S. and others developing a language called humanitarian intervention. I noticed that the Catholic Church is very on point on that. Whenever we hear about the Catholic Church, the subject is either the
sexual
abortion
abuse.
Pedophilia or yeah. something. A bunch of it's always negative. It's always ugly stuff.
Yeah.
But the Catholic Church was critical of the interventions by the great powers, always cautioning them that they didn't have a basis of war. Isn't it the to be attacking anyone? And it wasn't the Catholic Church that developed the concept or debated the issue of just war. Could it be? And they tried to turn it in. They turned it into an important debate where they long papers were written on the subject.
Oh yeah, it was a medieval concept. I don't know if there was ever a just war, but there was always the protection of innocent people and the dignity of those people. Yeah.
But didn't they also lay out the point that you cannot attack anyone unless you can show that you made every effort not.
Absolutely.
And, which seems to be
well.
Gone.
Then that was I wasn't a huge fan of John Paul II, but I mean he was a. Trenchant critic of the invasion of Iraq.
And they ignored him,
and that should have been a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And there were right-wing Catholics that tried to get him to change his mind, but he was very good on war. I mean, he'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Look where he came from, caught between the Russians and the Nazis. Yeah. I mean, he knew what war was like,
as do many Europeans, actually. If you do meet Europeans, they do have a deeper sense of what we're talking about.
Well, one of the problems, Phil, that when we were in the early 80s, and the big question was, what about the Russians? And I would give talks, what about the Russians? They lost 18 million people. Don't you think they know a little bit about what suffering is? Yeah. We didn't have a bomb dropped on us.
Mm-hmm.
Here in North America, these people know suffering. So don't say, what about the Russians? What about us?
Yes.
We're the only people in the West that's used nuclear weapons.
By the way, you cite a wonderful name, and I was so glad to hear it again, Sidney Lenz.
Oh, my.
And he made that point. He said, hey, wait a minute. Who first developed the A-bomb? Who first developed the H-bomb? Who developed the intercontinental missile?
It was
not the Russians.
No, Lenz was an amazing guy. I became a friend of. He'd written 18 books. I brought him up to Toronto. I always tried to bring people together with thinkers and challenge our Catholicism to make it broader. Here was this atheist Jew, coming up, and I'll never forget it. He said, I got 25 teachers together, teachers for social justice, and this guy said, I started 1,000 organizations, 998 failed. But the two that succeeded changed the face of America, the speak outs in the war.
Uh-huh.
And he was a very humble guy. And he said, the real radical lives for the one moment. You don't know when the breakthrough is going to come. All you're called to do is to be loyal.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a lot to me, because sometimes you'd feel when you're vigiling, is this worth anything? But is this going to change anything? But they always remember, you're just called to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And just do what's right. And war is never right. So,
and the consequences such as the Holocaust is something that if people would meditate on these things, they would think twice or three times about so simply saying, "Oh, let's go and intervene somewhere," knowing if they knew what possible consequences. Tell us about your decision. And how you came to this, to teach the Holocaust.
Well,
1968, right?
Yeah, it was my own life among the Jewish community at Harvard Collegiate and my Jewish friends. I was abundantly aware of the Holocaust. The guy who played shortstop on my team, Brian Analevitz, he was a cousin of Mordecai Analevitch, who was the leader of the Warsaw Uprising.
Mm.
I mean, that's how rich my life was when I had friends like that. So then when I couldn't do it in the public system, but I went into the Catholic system and I said, we're going to have to change people's attitude towards, the Holocaust. It has to be, because nobody was speaking about it in those years. And there was only one film in the Toronto public system. And I had to develop whole curricula. And so later I worked for the Holocaust Remembrance Committee because I was really, I had a lot of skills. How do you teach it? You expose people to it. And then Ruth Cohen at the Holocaust Remembrance Committee said they wanted to bring survivors in. And one of them in particular was in my class for 25 years.
Well, initiating that, there was a risk that they, wouldn't they, that they would say, no, don't do that or something. I mean, how could, it's almost well, I guess it's based on, as you say, your own personal story, but you would think that as you are thinking of this, it might be somebody said, well, if you do that, then the others, we have to decide whether everybody else would do it.
Well, and, yeah, but I had a lot of freedom, you know. We could develop courses, and certainly it was part of history, and it was part of the lack of dignity of human beings, and then, of course, led me on to become also a friend of the Palestinian community. And I never saw any problem to
me. You just can't stay out of trouble, can you?
Well, it was a dual loyalty. I was committed to the state of Israel, but the, one of the lessons I learned from the Holocaust is you don't do this to human beings. And when I went to Israel, I was really hurt that I saw the Jewish state acting like this. And so I'm still a friend of the community, but it's like I say, if I have an alcoholic brother, I don't keep feeding him booze. I try to intervene and say, look, I think you're going down the road.
Well, that's what I had Ramsey Clark here. That's what he said about Canada. He says, quit encouraging America. I want you to tell America to stop doing these things. Don't join them. He says, you're not helping us as Americans if you're agreeing with Bush.
No, you don't have to be either side. To me, it's a dual solidarity. I'm for both peoples.
Hey, we got to tell a story here. It's very, our listeners need to know that you once counseled a young man who came to you and said he was thinking of going, he joined the U.S. Army and fighting in Vietnam. His name was John Candy.
Yeah, John was a typical adolescent kid.
I couldn't believe that when I read it.
Yeah, yeah. He had an uncle, I think, that was killed in World War II by the Japanese. And I said, John, it's not the same people. And you don't really want to do this. And I brought a friend in who had been in the Marines. And that forged a bond between him and I till the day he died.
Wow.
He was very appreciative, and he was a very kind person. He used to just come and talk because he had no father of his own.
Yeah.
And he was
Did you, when you dealt with him, did you notice this, a comedic gene that you said to yourself, this guy could really light up a room?
No, I knew that he was, you know, engaged in the school plays and things like that. And then he went on to Centennial, and he'd come back and talk and wasn't happy. They were taking books there that we had done in grade 12. And then he just got into the comedy bit, you know, and then took my name in vain several times on his show.
Yeah, he was a terrible murderer, Ted Schmidt as Bruce.
Oh, yeah, I was the butt of his jokes, and then he'd come back and he'd laugh and give me a big hug.
He put you in confession where the guy said, oh, he's doing all these awful things to animals, and he says, oh, now listen, Ted Schmidt, I know that's you.
I was a victim of Second City, but... You know, I try to say in the book, Phil, I was probably the most serious teacher that these kids would ever have, and yet I loved humor, and I'd love to laugh.
Well, now, by the way, yes, but we don't quite know what laughter is. There's something going on with laughter, the same with tears. I mean,
absolutely. They're my two sacraments, you know. Tears and laughter. Laughter binds you with the human community. And as I said, I don't take myself seriously, but I take my cause very seriously. And I could laugh at myself. I mean, I'm just small potatoes.
You know, I got to tell you, I used to admire a Catholic preacher, Bishop Fulton Sheen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know. See, I can't remember what he was saying, except he did make one point, great one. I was sitting with my arms folded in front of a black and white TV, and he says... The United Nations is a fine institution, except it's upside down. The big countries are at the top.
That's
they
right.
should be at the bottom.
He was a great character. We've had a lot of characters in the country. It's a big tent.
Yeah.
As James Joyce says.
He opposed the Vietnam War.
He did.
Which
it got him in trouble in Rochester when he went to his bishop there. And he,
on helping African Americans.
That's right. That's right. Now, we've had a lot of wonderful people in the church. You know, I stay because of the great people I know.
I got to ask you another thing. We're running short of time. This is, of course, Ted Schmidt, and the book is Never Neutral, and it's at Book City. So make sure you get a copy. Do that as soon as the show's over. Well, you leave now if you want. But anyhow, Book City, Ted Schmidt, Never Neutral. A writer that influenced has certainly affected me a lot, and I ran into him once, Graham Greene.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he's very helpful, given right now where the state wants so much power and the CIA is so proud of its work around the world. He was one of the best observers of that,
he
did it through the eyes of always a Catholic story.
Yeah, he was what they call a Catholic novelist. You know, it's much like Bruce Springsteen. Springsteen mm-hmm. comes out of a Catholic background, and he says, you know, that's where you read the great themes of redemption and sin and evil and resurrection. Mm-hmm. They're the great themes of the church, and mm-hmm. It's a great story.
I got to make sure I ask you, too, what does Ted Schmidt work at the moment?
I'm writing and I'm still speaking out and walking with people who need help.
Are you, for example, we have a war threatening here with Syria? Are you thinking about it or writing about it?
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, it bothers me. There's very little. We don't see anti-war protests. I'd say 10 years ago we had more reaction as these wars unfolded. But suddenly we seem to have a little string of them, and people almost seem to have lost their focus.
Yeah, you can only be engaged in things. I'm very concerned about Israel and the Palestinians. I think if we can solve that, we can solve a lot of the problems in the Muslim world. Mm-hmm. And I'm very hopeful.
Oh, it's right there. It's right at the core.
It's right at the heart.
It would take – it's kind of like it would – it's like pulling something out of the lion's paw or something.
That's
howling
right.
and the scratching will die down.
And I've met so many great Jews over there, you know, that were working for peace. So I'm not cynical. Yeah. I'm very hopeful.
We're talking to Ted Schmidt. The book is never neutral. At the end of the book, he closes with an interesting – I don't think this guy's a Catholic. He might have been once. Bertolt Brecht, he said,
"Yes,
there are those who struggle for a day and they are good. There are those who struggle for a year and they are – better. There are those who struggle many years, and they are better still. But there are those who struggle all their lives. And these are the indispensable ones." So we're talking to the indispensable one, Ted Schmidt, and the book, Never Neutral, Teaching Life. I guess I'm going to throw out another name, too. I want to know which Dorothy can't see her name.
Dorothy Day.
Dorothy Day.
Well, Dorothy Day was a hero, of course, because she saw the ravages of war and what it did to the poor at home. You know, the money spent on war is not being spent in the inner cities. Hmm. A great woman. You know.
Did you ever encounter her?
No, I didn't.
Did you read her, Catholic Worker?
Well, I'm a subscriber to the Catholic Worker for 30 years.
Oh,
it keeps me grounded.
Yeah. You know, I just having her present in the world always made me feel better. I like knowing she was there, just like knowing you're with us. Your work is if I take what should we do, or if things are really bad, I say, well, we do have Ted Schmidt.
Oh no, there's
and the Schmidt family, and we have a great book, Never Neutral, A Teaching Life by Ted Schmidt. And boy, are we glad you came. And this is Phil Taylor, Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Terry, thank you. We'll see you next week.